Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
SB Nation and Underdog Dynasty present the Underdog Podcast.
All right, welcome to another edition of the Conference USA Underdog Podcast on UnderdogDynasty.com, SB Nation's home for G5 football. Joe Londrigan and Eric Henry here with you as always. Excited to continue our beat writer series today with someone who does a lot of stuff for us as well as 247, covers specifically the FAU Owls on the 247 network, Mr. Kevin Fielder at The Kevin Fielder on Twitter. And do you just make people call you the Kevin Fielder in public as well, Kevin, or how's that work?
I've considered it. I'd be lying if I said I didn't consider it a little bit more, but no, I don't make people refer to me as the Kevin Fielder at all times.
I mean, why not? Like if I had already like established myself as the Kevin Fielder on a social media platform, I would absolutely like make people use that all the time.
Again, I've definitely considered it, and you know, maybe I should start doing it and just, you know, just walk around, and if people try and say Kevin, just go, no, it's the Kevin Fielder, kind of like Ohio State, and just see if it can catch on.
Yeah, I mean, Eric makes me do that when I talk to him. It's like, no, it's the Eric Henry, actually.
That one doesn't shock me.
Oh, come on. I wish that was going around saying what I do make him say is the C. You know, my name is not complete without the middle of pretentious middle initial. So that is factual, but I do not make you say the arrogant.
What's the C stiff? I mean, I know what it stands for, but what's it stand for?
It's not your multitude of things.
Okay.
It really depends on who you're asking and time of day. I mean, if you ask me that in college, you know, there are probably people would say the C would stand for a myriad of things, but in my adulthood, it's just my middle initial.
I mean, that's going to be a story over late night Waffle House at some point, I'm sure.
Undoubtedly.
All right. Before we get too sidetracked and this just evolves into you two talking trash about the hockey playoffs, let's dive into some FAU football. Kevin, obviously the big story with FAU this offseason was Willie Taggart's legal situation between the stuff that happened at Oregon and the stuff that has actually happened at FAU. What's the feeling internally following that whole situation?
I think it's time, you know, after that has happened and it seems for the most part to be over with. Obviously, things can change as the offseason continues. I think now it's time to, you know, for them, it's time just to focus on football. It's time to focus on FAU football and, you know, building FAU into a team that can, you know, make a bowl game this season, compete for a conference championship and build upon the struggles that they had last season as a program.
Have any of the players made any sort of public comments surrounding, you know, some of the statements that came out during that whole process?
I haven't seen any public statements in terms of, you know, support or anything. I obviously there were a couple former players that were involved in the lawsuit, you know, particularly one of the backup punters from last season who had since entered the transfer portal. But in terms of current players on the roster, I haven't seen anything from anyone. You know, that was a public statement of any kind.
Gotcha. So you mentioned the amount of veterans that are coming back from this team and looking to build on what they had last season and specifically correct the mistakes that they made. What does it mean to have the amount of veterans that they do this season? Nikosi Perry and some of the other transfers who have a significant amount of games under their belt.
I think it's critical because, you know, you talk about last season. A lot of the times the message that Willie Taggart had for the media and had for people was, this is still a young team. You know, there were so many guys who either didn't get much playing time at former schools or, frankly, were freshmen or true freshmen or, you know, those second-year freshmen or those third-year sophomores. Just not a lot of guys with, you know, a plethora of playing experience. And you could tell that eventually did become a problem. You know, later in the year, I think it might have been something of just not having the veteran leadership of some other times. And, you know, you start to drop a few games and everything kind of just starts to collapse under you. And this season, I think that may not be similar because you return your starting quarterback you know, which you didn't really get the luxury of doing much last season, given that, you know, frankly, the year before they didn't have a true quarterback 2 years ago. You know, you return your starting center, Nick Weber, who is one of the team captains. You return a lot of players on defense. Those things are going to be important when you get into those middle and end season games when you need a leader to step up and start to make plays. And I think they finally have a good group of leaders who can step up and make those plays.
I want to ask you about one of those guys in particular, transfer linebacker Jamie Pettway from Missouri. He's going to be in a big role, obviously playing the middle linebacker spot for them. What should the expectations for him realistically be this season?
Yeah, I think that was a big thing that they did in the offseason was they went out and they got, I believe, three linebackers. It was Morvin Joseph out of Tennessee. It was Pettway out of Missouri. And it was Jaleel McCray out of FSU. And those three are going to be really important for FAU because you lose a couple linebackers. You lose Caliph Bryce. You lose Kihi Leroy. You know, you have to find ways to replace these guys. And the easiest way to do it is either through internal fixes. And personally, you know, Moultrie and Eddie Williams, I think, are good players. But even last season, they struggled a bit at times. And guys like Pettway, guys like Morvin Joseph are going to be really important for the defense, especially, you know, just kind of keeping, you know, cleaning up mistakes that may happen on the defensive line, since the defensive line is particularly still a little bit of a concern for FAU. But, you know, you take those linebackers. I think Pettway, I think Morvin Joseph, even Jaleel McCray, I think are going to have major roles on FAU's defense this year. And I think the expectation for them should be to be playing at a high level. I don't think it needs to be, you know, to play at an all conference level, but to play at a consistently high level and not make many mistakes, you know, throughout the year.
Speaking of all conference players, so FAU had no first or second team all conference players last season. And Kevin, I want to ask you, does that change this season? And if so, who do you think makes that cut?
Personally, I wrote about it when those teams were released. I thought it was outrageous that FAU didn't have a single player involved. I think that they will definitely have someone on the first or second team. You know, just names that I look at immediately off the top of my head, nose tackle Evan Anderson, who is quite literally, I think, one of the largest men in Conference USA football. I think he's like 345, wears a single digit, which just personally, I think, makes him look a little bit bigger on the field. You have safety TJ Young, who last season played, I think, out of this world. Had a pick six, had multiple interceptions, just made multiple big time plays at safety for FAU. He returns for, I believe, his junior season. You know, I look on the offensive side of things. It starts with the quarterback and Kosi Perry. We know the talent and Kosi Perry has from his time at Miami, even times last season. If he can put it together consistently with a new scheme, he can definitely be an all conference contender. I think LaJonte Wester at wide receiver can definitely be a guy who gets you 1,000 receiving yards. You know, and gets his way onto one of those all-conference teams.
Since you brought it up, Evan, what is your take on linemen wearing single-digit numbers now that that's a thing?
I think it's amazing. I think it's just amazing. I think it's amazing that you can see, the defensive linemen who are 325 pounds wear something like one, and it just, I think it's cool for the game of football. I understand that people want the numbers to be balanced, and, you know, you want the defensive lineman to wear like a 90s number. But I personally think we should expand it even further and have, and, you know, let the offensive lineman wear single digits. I just think that would be really cool to see, like, an offensive lineman, like an offensive guard wearing like seven. I think that would just be really cool.
I mean, I've done it in NCAA football before, for sure.
Yeah. I mean, I don't see the problem of not doing it.
Yeah. Let's add letters in there. Let's just make it full on full blown algebra equations while we're at it too.
3x plus 2.
Yes, exactly. The math majors will love it. Kevin, you were an FAU student. When you look at the hype around this team or lack thereof for the student body this year, how would you characterize it? I know we've talked a bit on social and with some other FAU folks about just kind of the, you know, frustration that's been building around this team the last couple of years with the record that Willie Taggart's put up and, you know, kind of the drop in overall production since the end of the Lane Kiffin era. But what is kind of the feel around the student body and amongst the diehards with this FAU program right now?
I think, you know, amongst the diehards and, you know, some of those fans that are a little bit more committed to football, I think it's hope. You know, you look at this team and you think, you know, there's no way that they're as bad as they were last year. You know, and even you look at last year, there was a point where they were competing, you know, up around those top teams in the conference, and it just kind of all fell apart late. You know, but I look at certain games last season where they were maybe one or two plays away from things going their way, and the season looks completely different. But in terms of hype around the program, and I think a lot of it is based on expectations. And, you know, personally, you look at what Lane Kiffin did for so many years, you know, winning conference championships, winning bowl games, being the talk of college football at times. People remember that and now want that to kind of be reality. And personally, you know, there may never be another Lane Kiffin at FAU, you know, and a guy who is that much in the media sphere and that much in terms of well-liked amongst college football. You know, so many guys like Lane Kiffin, you know, so many fans like Lane Kiffin. I think that the biggest thing for FAU is just going to be to win football games. You know, students are going to start going to games. Students are going to start caring about the program if there are wins. You know, it's a lot easier to market a team that's 8-4 as opposed to a team that's 4-8 or 5-7. You know, it's a lot easier to market a team that's within, you know, competing for a conference title than a team that's fighting to make a bowl game in the last game of the season. And you kind of saw it last year when they were winning games early on in the year. There were fans in the stands and there were people who were excited about the program. As they started to lose games, I think some of those fans who aren't as diehard just kind of started to drop off, you know, but if you start winning, those fans should come back.
Eric, I want to ask you this as I pass the baton to you for the question portion. You mentioned on Slack you were going to go to the UCF-FAU matchup coming up here. What's your expectation as a UCF alum for the atmosphere at that particular game?
Yeah, Joe, it's funny you mentioned that because I actually do plan on going to that game. I try to at least get to – and it doesn't have to be a UCF game. I try to get to at least one college football game a year as a fan just because, you know, it's such a unique environment. Those of us who are college football – you know, reporters and writers and fans in general. But in specificity to that game, Kevin, were you a student the last time that game was played in Boca?
Oh, God. What was that, 2 years ago?
Yeah, right?
I'm going to say I was a student, frankly. The time gets jumbled up when you're been there for 4 years. But yes, I do believe I was. And if I wasn't, I think I was like an incoming freshman. So might as well have been a student.
So, Joe, just, you know, I have to lay that groundwork in answering your question. Mm-hmm. Anyone who was at that game knows it was a bit of a cluster bleep.
Oh, it was. And it was absolutely just a mess.
And I don't know what happened, Joe, because, again, I've covered plenty of games at FAU. Now, granted, I have never covered a sellout at FAU. You know, it's for a myriad of reasons, but I've never covered a sellout. That game, as Kevin can attest to, was a sellout. And there were fans who didn't get inside the stadium until, I want to say, like the second quarter.
I think there were fans. I think I heard some fans who didn't get until like 5 minutes left in the second quarter, and they showed up 30 minutes early expecting to get it, and it was a mess.
So, Joe, when you ask me what type of atmosphere am I expecting, definitely expecting a rowdy one. Because I mean, listen, the trip from Orlando to Boca is 2 hours, depending on how fast you drive. So, I mean, there'll be plenty of UCF, you know, faithful there. But I do think there's going to be a very I don't mean tense in a bad way. Just there are a lot of people from the Orlando side who will make that trip and will remember the struggle it was to get even into FAU Stadium. So that will probably set the tone and the atmosphere for everything else.
Yeah, I think that there will be a very good atmosphere for that game in specific. I don't know if it'll be a sellout. I think it'll be as close to a sellout as you could potentially get. You know, UCF fans have historically traveled well. They particularly travel very well in my mentions on Twitter, but they travel well as a fan base. they're a great fan base for college football. They travel very well. They're going to travel to FAU. It's barely a drive. You can make a day trip out of it, or you can make it a weekend trip if you truly want to. Like, there are going to be a lot of UCF fans. I think there will be a lot of just casual college football fans who want a good matchup in South Florida that week. I don't know who Miami plays, but, you know, I think there will particularly be a good mix of fans from both teams and, you know, just casual fans. I think you'll see as close to a slot as you can get, you know, at FAU.
And that's the reason. Or go ahead, Joe. Did you want to piggyback off that, or can I?
No, I was just going to say the blood alcohol level in Boca is going to be very high that weekend, but yes.
No, that's undoubtedly a fact. And that's also a reason Kevin makes mention of, the reason why I want to go to that game specifically. FIU is off. I believe UM is out of South Florida that weekend as well. So should be a pretty raucous environment. Kevin, got to ask you, this is a very pertinent question. Is it indeed still time to hunt?
I don't appreciate that one. I knew it was coming. I knew this was coming. No, it's unfortunately still not time to hunt. I think you guys just may own our stadium and own our team. I think if you go to Wikipedia, it'll just say owner Tampa Bay Lightning.
I apologize to our listeners. I had to sneak that one in. Here's a serious
Panthers
question.
Have Kodak Black, though. The Panthers have Kodak.
They do win in terms of celebrity fans, but in terms of on ice performance, not so much.
Anyhow, Joe, just go there and stay in Portland, please. All right. So to back to my line of questioning, for us, really interrupted. Kevin, I want to lean to something you mentioned with Joe, right? In talking about the atmosphere around the program. And you mentioned that, in your opinion, that there won't ever be another Lane Kiffin-like, type of environment around the head coach at FAU. And listen, I know I'm putting you in a bad spot as someone who covers, you know, FIU. I kind of hate the comparison question between coaches, but I do have to ask because I find it interesting. When you look at the career trajectory of Lane Kiffin and of Willie Taggart and the way their careers have played out, there are more similarities than there are differences.
Yeah.
So I guess to put that in the form of a question, Kevin, can Willie Taggart not be that type of beloved person? Or is it just, you know, was there just a time and place with Lane getting to FAU when the program was coming off of the Charlie Partridge era, and that won't ever be able to be replicated?
It's interesting because I think if you ask five different people, you'll hear five different answers. Personally, I think Lane Kiffin and Willie Taggart are different figures in college football. Lane Kiffin had obviously been famously fired on the tarmac at USC. You know, he's always been involved in the news. He kicked a 70-yard field goal with the Oakland Raiders, the game before he was fired. There's a Lane Kiffin story everywhere. Willie Taggart, on the other hand, and I don't know how much of this is truly true to Willie Taggart, but he's not as well liked in terms of college football. You know, you look at the FSU fan base, they obviously don't like him because the success on the field wasn't there. I don't know what the Oregon fans' opinions are, but I don't know if they truly like him as well because he left so early. They're just two kind of different figures. I think in terms of for FAU fans, there's definitely a chance that Willie Taggart can reach that Lane Kiffin figure. If you win two conference championships here, you go to the American and you win a conference championship or something along those lines, FAU fans will appreciate you. You know, it'll be the thing of, what Lane Kiffin did was great, but he won us a conference championship in the American, and you'll hear conversations like that. But, in terms of just being on the same figures level, like Lane Kiffin's just a completely different character. I don't think there's even a character in college football quite like him, in terms of always being in the news for whatever reason. Like, he's just really good at being Lane Kiffin.
Yeah, again, it's interesting you make the note there in terms of Willie Taggart, not actually being liked. And again, I won't push that any further because all that can do is put Kevin in a bad spot. So I'll save my own editorial for another podcast. But I want to stick with the coaching staff, Kevin. Much simpler question for you. So here, this should be a bit less tedious. Can you talk about the additions, especially on the offensive side of the ball with Brent Dearman, Chad Lunsford, and of course on the defensive side of the ball with Todd Orlando? You get three veteran coaches. Obviously, Brent Dearman was in conference coming from Middle Tennessee. Chad Lunsford, a veteran coach coming from Georgia Southern, and Todd Orlando with a lot of experience as well. Just talk about what that brings to the program.
Yeah, I think it's really important for FAU. Last season, FAU obviously struggled on offense at times, and Brent Dearman almost famously beat FAU to prevent them from making a bowl game. And, he did so with a third string and fourth string quarterback. I've spoken to a couple former players of Brent Dearman. They all speak super highly of him. They all rant and rave about him as a coach, as a person, as a family man. I think he's going to be huge for FAU in developing the quarterbacks that they have on the roster and building an offense that's a little bit more sustainable. On the defensive side, Todd Orlando has coached at USC, has coached at Texas. I believe he coached at FIU. I don't remember for sure, but I believe he had a very brief stint at FIU. Coached at Utah State. He's coached across the state or across the country, and he's had success at all those places. You know, it's obviously been varied success at the Power Five level with Texas and USC, but he's a great defensive coordinator. He's going to run a defense, you know, in the 3-3-5 that really fits what FAU wants to do. Chad Lunsford obviously brings head coaching experience, you know, and I think that's important to have on the staff as well. And then you look at some of those younger coaches that they hired, particularly, you know, on the defensive side of things, Brandon Harris and Derek Gibson, the cornerback and safeties coach. You know, I know a lot of people who speak really highly of Derek Gibson while he was coaching high school at Miami Killian, and Brandon Harris. I've heard a lot of people speak really highly of him too, you know, particularly recruits who are being recruited by him. I think you're going to see a lot of success in that staff, you know, going forward.
Yeah, first off, just to piggyback off the point you made, Todd Orlando was with FIU 2011 to 2012 as a defensive coordinator. And it's interesting, you know, obviously I had a chance to work with Brandon Harris, or not work with Brandon Harris, but I should say cover Brandon Harris last year at FIU, definitely an up-and-coming rising coach. So pretty interesting to see him switch sides of the Shula Bowl rivalry. Want to take it to the team on the field. Joe talked about Nicosi Perry and some of the other guys. I want to start with the running back situation. And Johnny Ford seems to be the bell cow back, seems to be the guy who is of most favor. But FAU did lose a fair amount of veteran, I wouldn't say veteran depth in the running back room. Just talk about that a little bit. You know, Malcolm Davidson seemed to have fallen out of favor. You know, some of the other guys have moved on and graduated. Just talk about what that running back room looks like with Johnny Ford being the main guy.
Yeah, I think if Johnny Ford is playing, he's going to be the bell cow back, and he's going to be the guy you rely on a lot because he was the guy you relied on a lot last season, and he clearly proved it. Behind him, Marvin Scott III, a transfer from Nebraska, obviously played, did not play a lot at Nebraska, but did have some playing time, scored a touchdown while there. You know, he's going to be a back that's going to be a really good backup back, I think, this season compared to last season. I think last season you may have had a couple more bodies that obviously had past success. Malcolm Davidson, James Charles was, you know, a good leader and was a good pass blocker and particularly a good receiving back. Larry McCammon had some success as a power back. This season, I think Marvin Scott could be the starting running back if you needed him to be. You know, I think he kind of is that jack of all trades running back. He can catch the ball at the backfield. He can run. You know, he's got a little bit of speed to him. Those kind of things that you want to look for out of a starting running back. Outside of him, I really like Subari Mobley, you know, a second year, a redshirt freshman from Miami Northwestern originally. He was a guy who got some playing time late last season, you know, and I think impressed a little bit in those carries. I think he'd be a really good third running back for FAU. Kelvin Dean has scored some for FAU, just hasn't really been able to find his way in the field. But I think overall, while the group may not be as deep as it has been previously, I think you may see a little bit more top-end talent, which may be beneficial for FAU, you know, looking forward to knowing that you have two running backs that you can definitely rely on in Johnny Ford and Marvin Scott, and then guys behind them that could really turn it on, you know, if you gave them the carries.
So that's a segue into a question that I wasn't sure if I was going to ask, but I think you kind of touched on it, so I think it begs a follow-up, Kevin. For anyone listening to this podcast, you know, knows, or frequent listeners know, that I'm a fan of Willie Taggart. If my, you know, answers earlier when the Lane Kiffin Willie Taggart comparison didn't give that away, but something that I was somewhat critical of him, and I kind of want your thoughts on this, is his management of the backs over the past 2 years. You talked about the fact that maybe this year's group seems to be a little bit top heavy and not necessarily going to have the depth. Just in general, Johnny Ford is what, 5'5", a buck 95?
Yeah.
And it's not the same. Right. That's not to say he can't hold up and take the punishment, so to speak. He's done well. He had success at South Florida as a freshman, had success last year. But I just look at the numbers here. Johnny Ford had over twice as many carries as the next back, which was Malcolm Davidson. Do you think that maybe there's room to kind of divide the carries a little bit more? Or does it just make sense to say, hey, you know, Johnny's our guy and you know, he's going to help us in the receiving game, obviously, and catch the ball in the backfield. Let's just ride him and you know, see where that takes us.
I think you'll absolutely see a little bit more balance this season. Last season, I thought they should have balanced it a little bit more. That was constantly a question we would ask Willie Taggart and Michael Johnson, senior, last season's offensive coordinator. I don't know if we ever got a full response. It might have just been, you know, some guys were hurt, you know, when they wanted to play, or they didn't fit the scheme, or whatever the answer was on any given week. I thought personally they should have, you know, balance it out a little bit more, because you could see at times that Johnny Ford, as good as he was and as talented as he was, would either start to slow down or, you know, would take a couple, you know, bang up injuries. You know, he would bruise a wrist or something and be out for a series or two. And, you know, this season, I think I'd like to see them definitely really rely on Johnny Ford. You have to, if he's playing, he's, you know, arguably your most talented back. You know, Marvin Scott, I think, is a guy who you can definitely give 10 to 15 carries to if you need him to. But I'd also like to see them go a little bit deeper, give carries to, you know, Zuberi Mobley, give carries to Larry McCammon at certain points. You know, I think that there's definitely a situation where you can have a time. And, you know, if FAU and Willie Taggart has constantly talked about wanting to play running back by committee, you know, then let's make it a running back by committee. Let's give multiple guys the ball and let's give them chances to get hot and, you know, give them a series or two in a row and see if potentially they can just catch fire at the right time and you can ride that hot hand for a game, as opposed to just needing to rely on Johnny Ford at all times.
I want to go to the defensive side of the ball, and you touched on Evan Anderson, certainly one of my favorite players in all of Conference USA, again, a mountain of a man. But I want to go to someone who I think has potential to really be a breakout player, and I want to get your thoughts on it. Chris Jones, where can he factor in terms of being an excellent pass rusher and kind of, you know, helping out with Jalen Joyner and you know, really providing a pass rush for FAU this year?
Yeah, it was interesting last year because I thought Chris Jones may have played in a role that really wasn't fit for him, and it may have just been necessity. You know, last season, the depth on defense wasn't necessarily where it should be. But I think if you kind of, I think he's going to be a little bit more at a weight that fits him a little bit better. You know, I think he might've been playing a little bit too heavy at times last season. And then you kind of tell that he would not have that same explosiveness that you saw out of him out of high school, but he is a very talented pass rusher. You know, there were times last season where he would just get in the backfield and cause disruption. And that's really what FAU needs. You know, last season, they just didn't create the pass rush that you expect out of top level college football programs. I think their leading sack had a sack getter was, I think it was Jalen Joyner with 4 sacks or something along those lines. But there wasn't a guy that you could really rely on last season. And then you look 2 years past with Leighton McCarthy and Jalen Joyner, those guys just tore teams apart. And it was, you know, it was a sense that they would get a sack on any given drive. I think this season in particular, I think you'll see a little bit more pass rush depth. Guys like Chris Jones, guys like Courtney McBride, guys who you can definitely rely on. I really like Chris Jones. I think that if he's playing at a weight that fits him a little bit better and he's, you know, kind of in a situation where he can play as a stand-up guy or even in the dirt a little bit more, he can definitely be a guy who turns heads for FAU fans.
Got one more question as far as guys on the field and then want to take it to do a broader look at the schedule. Kevin, when you look at the secondary, I mean, you talk about TJ Young, and obviously he's one of the top safeties in CUSA, as you made mention. Definitely a bit of a snub that he was not on the, you know, didn't make any of the all-conference teams. I think Grayson Cash was the guy who got selected over him, and, you know, that's certainly a point that I could argue.
Look, personally, I didn't understand it, but I'm not the one who gets to vote, so.
But I do want to ask you this. Outside of TJ Young, who are going to be some of the guys? Because we've seen some of the veterans from the past few years, you know, whether it's due to transfer or graduate, no longer with the program. Guys like Amon Ross, guys like Jordan Helm, Zion Gilbert. So where does the secondary sit? I'm sure, you know, guys like Smoke Mungin and others will step up. But just give us some names of guys in the secondary to keep an eye on.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned Smoke Mungin. I think he's going to start on the edge or one of the boundaries. And last season, I think, you know, after Deshaun Moss went out, you know, with a shoulder injury, he was a guy who really stood out. He finally got his first interception, you know, after being so close, it seemed like 50,000 times the year before. But he's a guy who can just flat out make plays, you know, and teams would start to challenge him a little bit last season because of Zion Gilbert on the other side. And he would make a play. He would constantly be able to make a play. He's a little bit shorter. You know, that's kind of a theme for FAU's cornerback room. You know, another guy that I really like is Central Michigan transfer, just recently transferred, in Damon Hill. You know, he's a guy who played a little bit at Central Michigan, actually got some significant playing time across 2 seasons. But he's going to be a guy who I think starts on the other boundary side. Those two, I think, can form a formidable cornerback group, and one that, you know, if they stay healthy, can definitely be a group that can help FAU, you know, at a position of somewhat concerned last season. You know, after Deshaun Moss went out, you kind of saw that FAU's cornerback room wasn't always consistently playing at a high level. You know, replacing Jordan Helm isn't going to be easy. You know, a lot of people called him the coach on the field. You know, that was constantly a thing that was talked about, was, you know, he was a guy who knew every play call. a guy you can rely on to constantly make plays. I think Amani Eli Adams is going to be kind of the first guy to take over that job. And last season played pretty well at times. And, you know, there were even times where they would go three safeties and have him on the field with Hellman Young. But, you know, it's definitely going to be a concern of trying to replace him. And if, you know, if there's an injury in that room, I think you're going to see some struggles out of the safety room, particularly playing alongside TJ Young.
Last one here for you, Kevin. I got to ask you, you know, when taking a look at the schedule here for FAU, definitely some things that intrigue me, and I definitely want to get your thoughts as far as, you know, what the expectation is in terms of really what this, you know, A, what a successful season should be like, and B, just what are some kind of the games that really stand out to you? I mean, you take a look at opening up with Charlotte, then you have Ohio, Southeastern Louisiana, and UCF. I don't know about you, Kevin. I'm a big believer in kind of taking the season in quarters, right? You know,
yeah, I agree.
But you kind of get a feel for your team there. So just kind of, you know, with the schedule release or the kickoff time release, I should say, today. But when you take a look at this schedule, I mean, what is in your mind? And I'm not asking you to predict a record right now, but just in general, what do you think is really the ceiling for this team? And what do you think is the floor?
I mean, I think the ceiling is a conference championship. I think they have as much talent as anyone in Conference USA if they can find a way to put all the talent together. I think the floor is, one of those 6-6, 7-6 bowl games, where you kind of just barely sneak into a bowl game. If things don't entirely go your way and the offensive continues to struggle, which has been a theme under Willie Taggart. I think realistically, you fall somewhere a little bit more in the middle. I don't think that they're going to, personally, I think that there are a lot of great teams in Conference USA this year. You look at teams like UTSA and UAB. I think FAU can definitely be like one of the top four or top three teams in the conference. I think they're going to be a team that late in the season, you're looking at potential ways that they can find a way into the conference championship game. In terms of games that really stand out to me, obviously UCF, you want to see where you measure against a team that's going in the Big 12. Purdue next. Those two games are going to be, I think, kind of critical to see where they stand. But other games that stand out to me, UTEP, UAB, there's a stretch of two games there, in back-to-back weeks. UTEP, I think, was one of my surprise teams last year in the fact that they played really well, constantly last season. UAB is going to be a team that's competing for conference for the conference championship game. Those four games, if FAU can find a way to win three of them, or even win two of them, but look like a competitive team in all of them, it's going to be clear that they're not what they were last season and that they're a better team. They're a more improved team. They're a team that is overall a little bit more complete as a unit, as opposed to having a lot of kind of like top players, but didn't know where they really fit together, consistently.
Kevin, as you know, before we get ready to, close up this podcast, got to have a little bit of fun with you. So want to play a little bit of rapid fire here with you. Want to ask you a couple questions. Want to start here with this, Kevin. Favorite sports memory that you've had as, you've been a professional, even though you're still a student, the favorite sports memory as a professional and favorite sports memory as a fan?
As a professional, it's the Boca Bowl. I think that was now 2 years ago or something. Them winning that Boca Bowl, I think a lot of people didn't expect them to because, they just didn't have, they had a lot of guys out with suspension and injury. As a fan, in college football, I think it's, Miami, Notre Dame a few years ago. I'm a Miami fan, so them kind of beating Notre Dame in a game or, college game day, prime time. As an FAU guy, I still think it's, that first Boca Bowl against North Texas, or the conference championship, rather, against North Texas, that kind of, I think, solidified FAU as a contender in the conference, back then.
Most memorable press conference.
Oh, geez. Lane Kiffin's last press conference was definitely memorable. And it kind of boils down to me asking him, how does this win compare to wins against Alabama games at Alabama? And, Lane Kiffin loves to joke around with the media. And I think that was definitely a very unique press conference for Lane Kiffin because we had all known he was leaving, but it was still Lane Kiffin in a way. And it was kind of Lane Kiffin on his way out. It was Lane Kiffin trying to be Lane Kiffin, one last time.
And last one here for you, Kevin, this one's specific to you, that you, I would say recently turned 21, but you are of legal drinking age now. What was the first beverage you had legally? Of course, you didn't do this prior to being 21. The first adult beverage you had illegally, Kevin.
Legally, it was, I think it was a Sam Adams at like 1 a.m. the day that I turned 21. And then I think after that, it was an Old Fashioned at a bar down here. I think that was the first one, if I can remember it properly.
What type of Old Fashioned?
Just a normal Old Fashioned with whiskey and, you know, just the grinds and the rinds and stuff. Nothing too special there.
Okay. All right. Can't be mad. Joe, Kevin, he's still got some time to explore.
Listen, a 21-year-old ordering an Old Fashioned, I'm mildly impressed that you had that kind of taste and dignity.
Yeah, I mean,
oh, Joe, you've never met Kevin. Kevin is equally 40.
I might as well be a 40-year-old man in a 20-year-old body.
Good to know. Good to know. You're halfway to being the appropriate age to live where you live, then.
Yeah.
All right, Kevin, can't thank you enough for your time, man. Once again, on Twitter and other social media at the Kevin Fielder, in addition to covering the AAC with Underdog Dynasty, covers the FAULs for the 247 Sports Network. Highly recommend following his work as always. Wow. And if you want to follow Eric and myself, it's at Eric C. Henry _ and at JOEHIO _ on Twitter. And of course, at Underdog Dynasty every day for more G5 football content. Like how I enunciated that there. I did. Anyway, happy football watching, everybody. We'll talk to you very soon. Make sure you leave a review, please. I need the validation. Bye.